Yeah, we really appreciate it, Todd. You're probably one of the busiest people in the business right now. Huh? My goodness, I see you on everything.
The NFL never sleeps, Coach, as you well know, and especially over the past 14 months with all the variety of non-football issues. We are never lacking for things to talk about on NFL Network.
No, that's for sure. Well, you, Tom, have always, I think, delivered your message very succinctly, intelligent, very calm way, and you get the point across, and I think people appreciate that. You certainly gained that market share, I'm sure, because of what you come how you come across. So, having said that about you, I want to get into some things. I know you put out a tweet here just a little while ago, a few hours ago. I guess there's some news on the Deshaun Watson situation. Is that true?
Yeah, that's right. They're going through a process right now, and this has been litigated in part through the courts, in which 14 of the 22 women who had accused Deshaun Watson of sexual misconduct, or in a few cases sexual assault, were ordered to refile their lawsuits with their names attached after originally filing them as so-called Jane Doe lawsuits anonymously. That was in part based on requests from Deshaun and his attorney, Rusty Harden, to adequately investigate the claims and defend their client. In response, the attorney for the women, Tony Busby, announced that all of the accusers would refile to attach their names to the lawsuit. One of those accusers chose to drop her lawsuit, voluntarily dismiss it in court. 20 of the others have identified themselves. There was still, as of last night, one outstanding. But this is all part of the process that's moving right now through the civil courts in Texas. There's obviously also the Houston Police Department has said that one woman came to them. And so they've also opened a criminal investigation with no further comments beyond that at this time. So you have this moving forward on multiple fronts, as well as, of course, the NFL conducting a review under its personal conduct policy that could, based upon the facts that come out, what the NFL finds, what the legal process turns up, obviously eventually could possibly lead to Watson landing on the commissioner's exempt list, being suspended or facing some other type of discipline from the league.
Yeah, I'm sure that. And that is a possibility. It would have to be. Tom, I'm going to jump right into something that is debated day in, day out on every talk show right now. But the scenario that presents itself in the draft with the 49ers having mortgaged half of their franchise to move up to the third spot. Now, I can tell you from having been in that situation or a similar situation before, not that we've mortgaged for the franchise, but the ability to do so, I would never, everybody in the organization has to agree that if you're going to put that much equity that you have in procurement of talent out there on the road or to somebody else, you better know who you can get and how you're going to get them. Now, I can't see that trade being made, Tom. Might just me personally. There may be, obviously, there could be something different going on. But me personally, I can't see that trade being made unless they knew exactly who they wanted to go after and what's happening in those first two picks. And not hard there. Because Jacksonville was Lawrence, and that's pretty well known. That can be documented in a number of ways. And with the guy at with the Jets, who just left their staff, and I'm sure they had a lot to do with promoting him for that job. So they should know what they're going to do. Should get a signed in blood type contract. so they know who's going to be number three. And I would agree. I think it's Jones. I won't get into all that, but they would have to know that. They wouldn't mortgage the future of the franchise not knowing everything about who they were going to pick and why they were going to pick that person. Now, there's only one other scenario, Tom, that I can think of that they could have agreed on, and I can't imagine that. I think this is a long shot. They said the first three quarterbacks on their board are Lawrence, Wilson, and Jones. And the two in front of them, they know that with the third pick, they're going to get one of those three. And for some reason, they have them all graded the same, which I just can't see being the case. But in case they would be satisfied with any one of the three, they've got nothing to lose there. But what I'm asking you is, where do you see that standing? What have you heard? And where do you think that's going to go?
Well, the 49ers are really going through that process right now. You know, Justin Fields having his second pro day today. Trey Lance from North Dakota State will have his second pro day. I believe it's next Monday or Tuesday. Both those quarterbacks are going to be incorporating some concepts that the 49ers request. You know, drills that Kyle Shanahan uses in practice, throws that he uses a lot in his offense. They'll be doing some of that stuff as part of their pro day. Now, you know, going back months, really, you know, to February, the consensus within the league going into this process was Trevor Lawrence was the number one quarterback. Zach Wilson was the number two quarterback. In fact, I did not talk to anyone, any scout, general manager for any team who had done their work prior to the pro day circuit who said they would go in any other order. The question has been, who is that third quarterback? And I would venture a guess that if you went around to 32 draft boards, you would find those next three stacked up in different ways between Mac Jones, Trey Lance, and Justin Fields. So, you know, the thinking within the league has been that Mac Jones is going to be the guy for the 49ers. Certainly there's a lot of people who believe that. The 49ers have had a couple of opportunities to check him out at his two throwing sessions that he's had so far. But at minimum here, they are going through, you know, the steps here and doing full research on Lance and Fields to see them as well. You also have a connection with Kyle Shanahan to Justin Fields through the QB Collective, which is a group of coaches who, you know, for the most part, run that same offense. They all come out of the Mike Shanahan, Kyle Shanahan, Sean McVay tree to work with high school quarterbacks, top prospects. And Fields was one of those guys several years ago. So Kyle Shanahan has, you know, in the past worked directly with Justin Fields, which, of course, leads to natural speculation that he's got a, you know, a history with Fields. He knows a little bit more about him. He would necessarily, you know, people would not necessarily know everything Kyle Shanahan, all the work he's done on the guy because he's had exposure to him. And then you got a guy in Trey Lance who, you know, quite possibly is the most talented of the three. You just haven't seen much of him. I think he played 16 or 17 games in North Dakota State. He's only thrown 24 passes or more in a game twice in his college career. Obviously, he was playing against a lower level of competition at North Dakota State, but big, you know, pretty big arm. He's worked a lot under center, a lot of play action in that game. They do a lot of things that you see Shanahan offenses do. So, you know, I don't think that you necessarily, I certainly do believe, knowing Kyle Shanahan, that he has a very good idea who the guy is going to be. And to your point, you don't trade up to number three and shrug your shoulders and go, ah, we'll figure out who we're going to draft. But, you know, they're continuing to do their homework here, going and seeing these other two quarterbacks a second time. And I think that, you know, really, for all the other teams then speculating, whether it's the Falcons or teams that might want to trade up to the Falcons at number four, you're going to have multiple contingency plans here, depending what happens with that number three pick, because there still seems to be very little question within the league that's going to be Lawrence one, Wilson two, and then we'll see what the 49ers do.
Well, I couldn't agree with you more, but my contention is that absolutely you don't make a trade like that, Tom. I can't even conceive of making a trade like that unless they were very committed as to who they wanted And in my opinion, and I think the opinion of others that I've talked to, that quarterback has to be a quarterback that fits their system, or a guy that they feel can execute the way they want to move offensively. And that's the fit. It's not necessarily based on potential. I hate the word potential. I never let our scouts, don't ever tell me about potential. Potential means you're gonna draft a loser. It's just there are too many ifs involved in the other two. I think they're going to look at these other pro days to cover their bases and think about it now, to cover themselves with the press, so that if the question ever comes up, why didn't you take a look at the second pro day of the others? They can say, we did. We did our homework, and we've got that documented in spades. So I certainly understand why they can do it.
The other dynamic, you bring up the scheme fit, and one thing I don't think has been talked about enough is the Jets, 49ers, and Falcons, who are drafted 2, 3, 4, all run pretty much the same offense. Because remember, Mike LaFleur, who is a former Kyle Shanahan assistant, followed Robert Saleh to New York. Arthur Smith is the new coach of the Falcons. He picked up the offense that was installed in Tennessee several years ago by Matt LaFleur, who, of course, also another former Kyle Shanahan and Sean McVay assistant. So the other scenario here is the 49ers also have to figure out, let's say the Jets shock the world and take Mac Jones as their quarterback. Do they go to Zach Wilson? Do they go to Fields? Do they go to Lance? If you're an NFL GM, an NFL head coach, you don't want to leave any scenario kind of unchecked, and what you would do if this happens. I don't think, based upon everything that I've talked to and the belief within the league, it does not sound like there's a lot of people who doubt that it'll be Lawrence 1, Wilson 2. But if somebody surprises you, well then, unless you're planning to trade out of 3, you at least have to go into this knowing who are the 3 quarterbacks you would be willing to take there just in case somebody surprises you.
Yeah, I think that would be, as I said, the second scenario that would be tenable with making that type trade. And that would be that who the first 2 quarterbacks are going to be. And you know who your guy is, should an unforeseen shuffle happen, you would be satisfied with any one of the 3. I don't think that is the case, and I don't think that's the most likely. I think the most likely is they know who the first 2 picks are going to be, and they want their guy, period. I think I just really believe that this is something that has been orchestrated well. This is a big hit their time on anything with the draft, and certainly this one carries an awful lot of baggage if it goes wrong.
Well, it's going to have ripple effects for a long time to come, too. Anytime you've got, if you just look through the history of past NFL drafts, the odds that you're going to turn up 4 or 5 superstar quarterbacks are pretty slim here. Context is everything with these guys. Who are you being coached by? What system are you running? Who do you have around you? How much you put on your shoulders as a young quarterback? I look at Sam Darnold, who for a lot of people in that draft 3 years ago, he was the number 1 quarterback. It wasn't a strong consensus, but there were a lot of people who thought he was the number 1 guy. He was 20 years old. He was a little bit of a street baller. He had a lot to learn just in terms of, how to operate and play within rhythm and all that stuff. Well, he goes through 2 different head coaches and several different play callers and gets straight away to Carolina for a couple of future picks. I mean, these are heavy organizational decisions. You got teams kind of at different stages here. Jacksonville, of course, new coaching staff. This is going to be the face of their franchise. Jets, new coaching staff. Joe Douglas in his 3rd year. It's going to be the new face of their franchise. 49ers, they've been to the Super Bowl with John Lynch and Kyle Shanahan. They've had 3 other losing seasons, and last year riddled with injuries, obviously, but they think they can get back quickly here. I mean, you draft
you draft the wrong guy or you pass on the wrong guy, that can be something that that sticks with you, just like the Bears are experiencing right now. You know, Mitch Trubisky was the consensus number one quarterback in the 2017 draft, but based on how it played out right now, Patrick Mahomes is an MVP. Deshaun Watson, setting aside the current situation legally, has been a really good quarterback within the league. Trubisky made a Pro Bowl. He's been to the playoffs twice. He hasn't played, you know, horrible, but he hasn't played up to par with those guys. And all these guys are evaluated, not just by the media, but even within the league, against one another. There's a lot of pressure with these picks, and you're doing it at a time where you're not allowed under the COVID protocols to do private workouts, to do visits, to take the guys to dinner, to watch film with them in person. You're going off of pro day, and in the cases of several of these guys, a couple of pro days, as these teams try to replicate as best they can the experience of actually being able to work a guy out and make that final decision.
Yeah, you're right. I mean, well, there are only certain ways that you can procure talent in the National Football League, and that's free agency, trade, or the draft. And the most likely scenario for getting the type players that you need is to stockpile them through the draft. Now, this year was an unusual year with free agency because of the cap coming down. The cap situation put more players on the street, better players on the street. And New England, which was not their norm, they went out and got some players. How do you see right now, following free agency, and I understand that the draft has to come in big, but who do you see maybe taking the lead right now in talent preparation for next year?
In which division or in general?
In general.
Well, yeah, I mean, it's kind of this is like the halfway point evaluation, right? It's prior to the draft. You know, I think that the fascinating team to watch is going to be the Patriots, just with the unique thing that they did in terms of investing in so many free agents, paying top dollar for guys like Jonnu Smith and Hunter Henry, kind of reforming that entire offense and the way that they want to operate, bringing in Nelson Aguilar. They've still got quarterback questions. They may well draft some money. You know, they re-signed Cam Newton, but his contract financially is certainly not anything that precludes them from, you know, evaluating other options as they go into the draft and beyond. I think that they'd be the number one team. I think that, you know, some of the other interesting ones to watch, again, it's tough to kind of compare, you know, who the best teams are, but I think the interesting storylines are they are in New England. It's in Jacksonville, assuming that they take Trevor Lawrence, as everybody has long believed that they will. Starting over with Urban Meyer, who's been out of coaching for the past several years. He's got a really veteran staff there. They were active in free agency. They've still got some holes they got to fill within the course of the draft. How does that entire thing play out? I think that those are two of the big ones. You know, I mean, if you're talking about, you know, the teams that were, you know, playoff contenders a year ago, I mean, I think you look no further than the two teams that were in the Super Bowl. For the Kansas City Chiefs, they completely overhaul their offensive line, releasing both tackles. They give monster money to Joe Tooney. They bring Kyle Long out of retirement. They sign a new center in Austin Blythe. You know, just really kind of remaking that thing on in terms of the protection unit. And then the Bucs bring back pretty much everybody. I mean, found ways to retain Shaq Barrett and bring back Leonard Fournette. Antonio Brown is really the one that's kind of still hanging out there. They make a, you know, a move that I think is more impactful than people realized last week by signing Giovanni Bernard after he got cut by the Bengals, just because Tom for so long has been so good when he's had a bona fide receiving type of back. That's what Bernard does. I mean, he can go down there and be a 60 catch guy easily. So how do they kind of evolve through the course of this season? I mean, I don't think you're going to find a whole lot of people, the Patriots moves and other teams moves withstanding, who don't sit there and look at the state of things and say those two teams that were in the Super Bowl a year ago aren't the favorites in their respective conferences, at least, pending the draft and how things play out in the months ahead.
Tampa Bay has made they really did a beautiful job in bringing back all of their players. And the pickup of Giovanni Bernard I think is huge because you're right. Brady made a living off James White getting matchups. He would get matchups and routes with White on backers and ill-equipped safeties. So, listen, Tom, I can't tell you how much I appreciate you coming on. I've kept you quite a while. I apologize for that, but I can keep you for a couple hours if we could. I thank you so much, and would like to talk to you again at some point following the draft and before the season, if possible.
You got it, Coach. Happy to do it.